Welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Kenneth Wishnia's story, Burning Twilight, appears in our March 2010 issue. The story ties into Ken's new novel, The Fifth Servant. Here's Ken to read Burning Twilight.
When rubles fall from heaven, there is no sack. When there is a sack, rubles don't fall. Russian proverb. We will meet again under the stars, the old woman had said. But by the time Cassie reached the village, it was too late. The old woman was gone. Now she sat alone, hunched by the campfire, wrapped in a long black cloak, trying to keep warm until her supper was ready. The wind blew the flames of the campfire low and ruffled the gamecock's feathers. The proud creature flapped its wings and pecked at the length of twine, tethering its leg to a tree. Although it kept her fed, Cassie worried that if the mountain folk kept paying her with live animals, she wouldn't be able to afford to buy another book as long as she lived. But some sense of obligation to the spirit of her one-time guide and mentor had driven her to spend the past 3 days teaching the old woman's apprentice some of the secrets of their trade. The girl's name was Paulina, and thankfully she was a quick learner, because Cassie had been banished from the Imperial City and expressly prohibited from entering any village or town of more than 500 souls, and from practicing her herbal remedies in any one place for more than 3 days at a time, a sentence that doomed her to being a perpetual stranger in her own land. Her practice had been destroyed, the bottles smashed, the books and papers burned. She had to start all over with nothing but the clothes on her back and a crude bundle of supplies that her friends had rescued from the flames. And of course, no man wants a woman who's been publicly gagged and pilloried, especially if she's unrepentant about it and doesn't care who knows it. By the morning of the third day, some of the villagers had taken to calling her Cassie the Wise, but others weren't so fond of her wisdom. They came for her with that icy look in their eyes that said her time was up, and that nobody needed the services of a traveling female apothecary. "Leave our village," they said, as the menfolk stood in the roadway, squinting into the afternoon sun, and made sure that Cassie ran the gauntlet of their stairs and left the village by sundown. Cassie watched the fading orange glow in the western sky. The last rays of the setting sun brought out the green in her eyes and highlighted the blonde streaks in her long brown hair. Once upon a time, these mountains had been her home, and she knew them well. So she was not surprised when the sound of early springtime revels reached her from the nearby village, where they would soon be dancing around painted maypoles and making hasty love matches. Her only companions on this cold evening were the arrogant gamecock and a battered copy of Paracelsus that had been readable when she had gotten it at the flea market a few months back in exchange for curing the bookseller's child of a high fever. But now the cover was gone, along with the last three sewn signatures, which meant that she was missing at least 48 pages. Still, she drew inspiration from the alchemist's most ambitious theories, even if they ended in mid-sentence, especially his unrealized dream of being able to refine plants and minerals to the point that their active principles could be applied more effectively, possibly by boiling their essences down to a thick syrup that would cure all manner of ailments and illnesses. All things were possible, at least in our thoughts. Our bodies, the frail mortal shells that briefly house our eternal souls, were not in the least bit godlike. But our minds, illuminated by the divine secret of the knowledge of good and evil, were close to godlike. It said so in the book of Genesis. The dusky path of exile had taken Cassie north and east toward the Catholic lands. She was a Hussite, like the majority of Bohemians, but she had also learned something from the Jews of Prague. A book by one of their rabbis, now lost to the ashes, had proposed that each day that a person devotes to righteous acts translates into one more luminescent stitch in the celestial garment worn by their soul in the world to come. Under such a system, Cassie figured that she might manage a loincloth at best if she didn't increase her righteous days, and quickly, too. It simply wouldn't do to be uncovered for all eternity in the Garden of Paradise. The gamecock scratched around in the dirt, preening and searching for its mate. By now the sky was darkening, and Cassie could just make out the angry red star in the Hyades that marked the heavenly bull's unblinking eye, and the bright cluster of stars a few degrees to its west. Most people in the city could barely make out the six brightest stars in the Pleiades. Those with the sharpest eyes saw seven. But on a clear, moonless night like this, she could usually see at least nine, with the distinct impression of still more lying beyond them, a glorious cluster of stars drifting in a cloudy haze. She drew her cloak close around her. It wasn't dark enough to see the stars clearly yet, But the curtain of night fell quickly in these mountains, which lay at the crossroads between the two mighty kingdoms of the Teutons and Poles. A ghostly sparkle caught the corner of her eye, and she turned reflexively. A pair of fiery marbles glowed in the dark just beyond the circle of firelight. The cock squawked and pecked at the disembodied spheres, but Cassie saw right away that it was only a cat straying from the village, her feline eyes catching the light in the way cat's eyes sometimes did, that caused them to flash like two tiny mirrors floating in the darkness. In spite of this knowledge, her heart had still jumped for an instant, and she understood how some of the backward mountain folk could easily be terrorized by the sight. What could possibly cause such an eerie effect? Everyone knew that cats could see well in the dark, but how did their eyes glow like that? What was the mechanism? She shivered and lost the next thought before it even had a chance to form. She would have to look into the matter some other time, after she had finally settled somewhere and could begin attracting regular customers and restocking her laboratory. The cock squawked and kicked up a minor dust storm, metamorphosing into a swirl of red and black feathers, but Cassie placed a burlap sack over its head and it quieted down. Then she dipped a wooden stirrer into the pot simmering over the fire, fished out a tasty morsel of chicken, blew on it, and held it out with her long, delicate fingers. The cat's whiskers twitched, her muzzle a shiny black mask ringed with a mane of bright orange fur. She was a genuine calico, a real mixture of everything. She padded toward Cassie's outstretched fingers, keeping low and wary. Cassie kept still as the cat crept closer. Its whiskers twitched, then twitched again, then it lunged, teeth flashing, and the bit of meat vanished from Cassie's fingers. Cassie could hear the cat purring. "Looks like I've made a new friend," she said to the pine needles and the stars above. Suddenly the cat's ears pricked up, and she sprang off into the underbrush. Leaves rustled as someone came running through the forest from the direction of the village. Cassie steeled herself for the worst, then a sturdy young woman pushed through the branches and stumbled into the clearing. It was Paulina, who had been drafted to be the midwife's new assistant. She stopped, breathing hard, her round face flushed and glistening, reflecting the glow from the fire. "Miss Chastova," she said, using the Czech form of Cassie's name. "Thank God you're here. Mrs. Svoboda's baby doesn't want to come out, and we need your help." Cassie leapt to her feet, took the simmering pot off the fire, and hung it from a branch. Then she gathered the ingredients for a groaning cake. Dried woodruff, caraway seeds, and some flowering buds from the broad-leafed hemp plant. The sky was still glowing with the faint purple of twilight, but the darkness was stealing up on them fast, and rain clouds were gathering on the horizon. No stargazing tonight, Cassie thought, as they hurried through the village square. A number of idlers watched Cassie's every move as she squeezed through the crowd gathered around a wagon watching a traveling company's Whitsunday pageant, though the holiday was still several weeks off, and stepped through the low doorway onto the dirt floor of the Svoboda's cottage. Irina Svoboda lay on a birthing stool in the middle of the bare floor, sweating and straining and squeezing her husband's hand while Mrs. Lenka, the midwife, wiped her forehead with a damp rag. The husband didn't even look up when Cassie came in with her bundle of herbs and got a quick summary from the midwife. Irina was in her seventh hour of labor, with minimal widening of the birth canal, and was suffering from terrible cramps and a low-grade fever. Cassie sent Paulina out for a couple of fresh eggs, then kneeled by the hearth to prepare the cake. She mixed the flour with the woodruff and caraway, mashed the butter and a sprinkle of sugar together with the hemp in a separate bowl, then greased the pan with more butter. The butter was essential. It didn't work without the butter. And waited for the girl to come back with the eggs. Outside in the square, the grim drama reached its climax as the Antichrist was unmasked as a Jew who admitted under pain of death that for 1,500 years his people had kidnapped and murdered Christian children, poisoned Christian patients, and robbed Christian customers, all because of a perverse, soul-consuming hatred for the good people whose only offense was their heartfelt belief in the Son of God. Paulina stoked the fire, and by the time Cassie put the cake in the pan, the performance had reached its satirical conclusion, as the tragic death of winter scenario was transformed into a bawdy springtime celebration of fertility in all its forms. Purged of sinful feelings by collectively witnessing the downfall of a common enemy, the town folk were free to vent their long-suppressed desires by joining the actors in prancing around the stage to the beat of drums and tambourines, singing, "The lawyer with his screed, the Jew with his greed, and what lies under a woman's dress? These three things make the world a mess." The lewd song swelled with voices high and low, bumping and pressing against the somber mood outside the cottage, until Cassie could barely hear Irina calling her husband's name. "Ludya, Ludya." "Yes, my dear," said Ludya. "Don't worry, everything's going to be fine now that the lady apothecary's here," he said. giving Cassie a dark look that warned her not to make a liar out of him. Cassie ignored him. She had worked closely with midwives like Mrs. Lenka before, so she did her part without having to be told what to do, massaging the travailing woman's neck and shoulders and laying warm towels around her belly while a midwife handled the delivery. Ludyuk sat there holding his wife's hand, whispering soft words and snatches of prayers as the midwife enlarged the opening around the shiny whorl of hair on the baby's head and encouraged Irina to be strong and push some more. The skin beneath the baby's hair was slowly changing from red to purple. Cassie brushed some loose hair out of her eyes and was tucking the tiny gold cross on a silver chain back inside her blouse when Irina took Cassie's hand and said that she liked looking at the way the cross sparkled in the candlelight, so Cassie left it dangling there for her to fix her eyes on. Soon she was feeding Irina bits of the cake along with soothing sips of cold water, while repeating a Latin prayer asking for God's protection. Cassie didn't believe in the healing power of the strange old words themselves, but many of her charges felt better because they believed in such powers. The mind's influence over the bodily humors had always fascinated her, and the effect was certainly worthy of further study. The cake eventually brought Irina some relief, but by then Cassie was sweating under her clothes as she and the midwife worked against the dying light of the fire. Then, without being asked, Paulina wiped the perspiration from Cassie's forehead and began rubbing the knot that had formed at the base of her neck with her free hand, and Cassie felt her shoulders relax a little. She thanked Paulina with her eyes. Then the midwife finally got a grip on the baby's head and neck and pulled down and out. A stream of new voices joined the whirlpool of passions rushing by the front window. But even as the chaos swirled around them on all sides, a cool stillness fell like a shroud over the Svoboda's rooms. Irina clutched Cassie's arms as Paulina wrapped the blue mass of flesh in sackcloth. "At least wrap her in a clean towel," the midwife said softly. Irina's face was as pale as wax. Her husband stared blankly ahead. Then he remembered where he was and tried to give Cassie a stone-cold stare, but all the hardness drained out of his face when his wife said, "Bless you all for trying to help," in a faint, dry croak. His eyes dropped to his hands, which were smeared with blood. "I'll prepare you something." Cassie could barely get the words out. "Something to help you build your strength back up." She stayed to wash the mixing bowls in the pan she had used to make the cake while Paulina wiped off the birthing stool and swept the floor, and the midwife burned twice-blessed herbs in the four corners of the house. Cassie carefully taught Paulina the psalm for these occasions in plain Czech so that the simple folk would understand and take comfort from the words. "If I say that the darkness shall cover me, and the light be night about me, I must remember that the darkness and the light are alike to thee. For thou hast formed my innards, thou hast knit me together in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am wondrously made, and eyes did see my unformed flesh, and all my days are written in thy book." The girl wanted to learn more, but Cassie told her to think about it long and hard because there was precious little room in this world for women like herself. Eventually, Cassie had to trudge back toward her campfire through the drizzling rain, ignoring the eyes of men and the filthy barefoot boys fondling bits of wood and stone to hurl at the effigy of a Jew that was being raised in the town square. The villagers listened open-mouthed as the local priest condemned the strong man of Okrushenstvo Zhidovskie, Jewish bestiality, then set the hateful thing on fire. Cassie was fighting off the oppressive feeling that nothing would ever make the pain of this failure go away. But something else weighed heavily on her mind as well, the creeping sensation that the ways of the wise women were slowly disappearing, and she couldn't help wondering if she'd been born in the wrong place at the wrong time, maybe even the wrong century altogether. She found a little gift from her feline friend waiting for her on the ground beside the dying embers. A small gray mouse lay in the dirt, its legs stiff and lifeless. She was grateful that the cat had made a clean kill of it, because even mouse blood would have bothered her just then. "Good girl," she said, kneeling to scratch behind the cat's ears and running her fingers through her thick orange-black fur. Then she picked up the mouse by the tail and tossed it into the woods. She rewarded the cat with another bite of meat. Then she fanned the coals until the fire came back to life, laid a piece of wood on the newly glowing embers, and sat in front of the fire for a good long while, waiting for the dull flames to warm her up. She closed her eyes, but she still saw the clotted clumps of scarlet and the shiny blue skin of the stillborn child like scenes from a magic lantern. The images made her shudder. because the wise women who helped to coax difficult babies into this world labored under the constant suspicion that when no one was watching, they would go slinking off into the night with the blood-gorged remains of the afterbirth and umbilical cord to perform black magic with them. And God help you if they accused you of offering the child up to the devil by killing it at the moment of delivery. She had watched helplessly as an old woman was stoned to death on the steps of the cathedral for just such a crime. She could still hear their voices. "What are the charges against me?" the woman had demanded. "You should be able to figure them out for yourself," her accuser replied. Cassie squeezed the cross around her neck. She could just picture herself trying to explain to an examining magistrate who didn't know a birth canal from a carpenter's bit that sometimes it just happens that way. A child is stillborn, and you're left with empty hands. There's no evil involved, it's just nature's way. The cat brushed against her leg, looking for attention. "Now what?" she said. "Don't tell me I need to think up a name for you." She scratched the cat under the chin. "But you must have one already. What is it? Calixta? Pie Wacket? Nibbles?" Then she heard it. She looked to the west. At first it looked like a cluster of stars gliding toward her through the forest, but the flickering shadows were all too human. Villagers with torches. They came after her with ropes to tie her hands and chains to weigh her down, for the rivers were deep and swift in this part of the wilderness. Cassie grabbed her bundle and ran to the northeast, leaving the gamecock and all else behind. The shadows grew longer, and a thick darkness spread over the land.
Thank you, Ken, for that reading of Burning Twilight from the March 2010 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. In a few weeks, we'll be posting the sequel to this story called Between Manka and Myra, which also features characters from Ken's novel, The Fifth Servant. I'm Linda Landrigan, the editor of AHMM. To learn more about us, please check out our website at www.themysteryplace.com. There you'll find information about the magazine, including subscription information, and our active forum. Look for Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine at your newsstand, or you can download issues to read on your e-reader devices through Amazon.com, Sony eBook Store, and FictionWise.com.